All right, so you're listening to this podcast right now, London is Blue, and guess what? We host our podcast on anchor.fm. That's right. If you're looking to host your own podcast, this is the easiest free way to get started. It's got a content creation tool, allows you to record and the podcast right from a phone. That's right. Don't even need a computer, but you can do it there too. They'll also help you distribute it, which is probably the most challenging part. You don't want to have to mess with that. They got you covered. You can get it right on a Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as any other place podcasts are found. And you know what? You can monetize it too. Make a little cash for sharing your great content with the world. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one individual place. So you know what? Head over to your app store, download the Anchor app, or head to anchor.fm to get started if you're ready to launch your podcast and make it happen.
Hi, this is Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
This is William.
I'm Mason Mount. You're listening to the London is Blue podcast.
All right, Chelsea fans, welcome back. Second episode of the week from your boys at the London is Blue podcast. Brandon still out dealing with some stuff at the moment, but we are sending him some positive thoughts at the moment, Nick. Nothing super serious, but when the building unit above you floods, it's never a good sign.
Sure. I mean, I've dealt with this in the past. Water damage is just the worst thing in the world. Thoughts with him. Also, there could be a hangover involved today. We're not 100% sure. Since I think him and Morgan went to a wedding yesterday. So, you know, there's probably a combination of factors, Dan, leaving Brandon on the bench, unable to play.
Well, and you know, we've done this before. If this is the first time you've heard a Nick and Dan show episode, I think you're in for a treat. You know, we have figured out that when we get Brandon out of the equation for a week, we pretty much can solve any singular or multitude of problems that's going on at Chelsea Football Club in the moment, Nick. I think we ultimately may even find the solution to world peace in this episode today.
Yeah, so stay tuned, world leaders of all stripes. What you'll find without a pesky Brandon involved is that there's less fence sitting, you know, there's less middle ground, which is great because we just get to say any ridiculous thing we want and he can't do anything about it.
That's right. We make sure that if we're going to get a little loony, we get Brandon out of the equation. But this is our second episode of the week. We're going to dive a little bit further into the Sheffield United match, and we're going to do that through the lens of some of the questions we've gotten from those of our supporters on Patreon. So these are patrons. They come through our Discord channel. If you want to get involved with that, head to Patreon, hit it up. It's a great way to get engaged and have an awesome community to chat with as well. But Nick, before we jump in, quick couple housekeeping items, promo codes you want to share, and then we will get right into the questions coming after the match.
Absolutely. World Soccer Shop, longtime partner of the show. They have a code LONDONPOD for 10% off. That'll get you some free shipping or customization or, you know, a trinket of some sort. So go there. Talisman Caps, London Blue 10 is the promo code for 10% off $35 or more. $35 is the average price of a quality cap from their shop. So that's a good thing. They also will still likely have their fall sale going on. So if you're interested in something besides a cap, like let's say a hoodie or a tee or a polo, you can take 15% off of those and then an extra 15% off all sale apparel with the code FALL15. And then you know Classic Football Shirts. They have classic football shirts. we're going to go to their London shop when we're over in a couple of weeks. We're really excited about that. Might even do a little bit of Czech Lampard Drogba action when we go to Munich for Oktoberfest, Dan. We are really excited about this idea and hope to not get beat up.
Well, we just know that we can make friends anywhere. We found that to be true time and time again, and we figure what's the best way to make friends than being in Munich wearing Chelsea kits from a Champions League season and making sure that we, you know, share a couple beers and, you know, remind people of what happened in their city and 2012. Very, very good good decision making on our part, and I don't see any singular problem with it.
There's no way it could go wrong, folks. We're geniuses.
All right, well, let's get in. So these are the questions we get from our Patreon members. We'll start with a very very on the nose one from Ben, who just basically and bluntly, in a probably a way that Nick Verlaine would appreciate, asked the question, why can't we put two halves together?
I can confirm that I do enjoy this question. It is one that I thought about multiple times throughout the preseason and early in this season. I think we lamented Maurizio Sarri for his second half approach in a lot of games last year. And outside of the Norwich game, which I think we came out stronger in the second half and really put the game to bed, there seems to be an issue. There seems to be some fatigue, both physical and mental, which we talked about in part one. But the approach has also then changed, like the line or the formation changed yesterday, Dan, to a 4-2-3-1. I think we lost some physicality in the midfield, and the back was still pretty open. There seemed to be gaps between midfield and defense that, you know, even Sheffield United, who are going to struggle to score goals this year, found ways to attack. So this is a thing that Frank has to really assess over the international break, and I'm sure he's going to figure out a way to get it right.
I think what I would look to is the fact that versus Norwich, and even a little bit more flat-footed, but in the first 15 to 20 minutes of this match versus Sheffield, what you saw is Chelsea swarm against players. You're looking at everyone is just pressing up high, keeping that high line from the defense, trying to push Sheffield back into their own box to basically put their own players inside of their goal. And that requires a hefty lift from energy, from mental concentration, and it requires everyone working in concert with one another. Ultimately, that is a very, very hard thing to keep up for 90 minutes, especially as you look at conditioning, you look at the fact that rotation has been limited by a significant number of injuries or individuals who are out or non-selectable at the moment for Frank. And I think that's where, if we take a lesson, not often do you want to take a lesson from Liverpool or Spurs, but at least in this case, Liverpool did win the Champions League last year, so we'll allow it in this one instance, is that getting a team capable of playing such a high press, getting a team who's capable of doing it for a significant portion of the match and finding less phases of resting is something that takes time, Nick. And so I think if this is the model of football that we're going to have going forward, the patience level required to watch this team acclimatize to it, it's no different than climbing a mountain, right? You have to figure out how do you climb it, get your lungs and body accustomed to breathing in less oxygen, and then beginning the climb again. It can't be something you try to climb all of Everest in one hit. You know, that's how you end up in a cave and the meal for the other individual who's left alive.
Wow, what an analogy that was.
Went dark here. We go dark when Brandon isn't here.
Yeah, darkest timeline reinstated. We're all going to die on Everest. Okay, so I think what you just brought up is right. If you look at a thing with like Liverpool, for example, who, Jurgen Klopp is famous for gegenpressing, right? He had to, over the course of his tenure as Liverpool manager, figure out how and when to press. You cannot press for 90 minutes in the Premier League. It's too physical. It's too much work. And even if you could do that once, you can't do it over the course of an entire season. It's just not an effective way to play football. So Frank has to understand, kind of when his players are gassed, when they can go. A lot of times that's at the beginning of the match, but right now Dan feels to me like a boxer that doesn't have a lot of stamina, that goes into the fight knowing that he has to win in the first three rounds, otherwise it's going to be a long night and maybe not win at the end.
That feels about right to me. I think ultimately we will find a path forward, we'll find what our balance is, and I think you look back to the Super Cup match, we took some different tactics in. We were a little bit more reserved in choosing to kind of counter or press in moments. And I think it'll come from the respect for the competition. It will come from, again, having the right selection of players available. And then I think it will come down to Frank Lampard's game management. And because I think as we talk about that, get into a second question from our wonderful friend Big Nash asking, our winningest manager parked the bus often. I don't think he parked the bus, but I think the managers he was underneath parked the bus to secure big wins. Is Frank hesitant to park the bus as a manager? Nick, are you seeing a little bit more fight rather than holing up in the foxhole moments to bag the points?
I think this is actually something I was a little bit surprised about yesterday because, you know, Frank, I don't think could have looked at the performance in the second half and said, yeah, we definitely got another goal in us. You know, like it just did not seem to be on the cards, even though there were a couple of chances that were kind of lackluster. It is a little bit surprising that he hasn't kind of gone deep block. He hasn't defended and tried to counterattack a little bit more with some of the speed that we have. There is a lot that's kind of reminiscent of us kind of, you know, doing this kind of attacking possession-based approach from last season. And, you know, it did leave us open at the back. It did, you know, kind of lead to some late, you know, chances for other teams. And I would, you know, with a young team who needs to have, you know, results to gain confidence, I would institute in the 81st minute after we've been, you know, attacked a few times in the second half, I would institute a low block. I would get everybody back. I would make sure that we have a solid shape. And that that seems to be the way to get a result. And, you know, I know that in his heart of hearts, he's a goal scorer. He wants to win the game, you know, at the other end. But Dan, to me, it seems right now that we just kind of need to be a little pragmatic about it.
I think about the way you look at it is that the substitutions, when you bring in Mishi, when you're hoping that he's going to contribute in maybe an attack-minded mode, when you have the lead at the 83rd, 84th minute when he's coming in, you imagine that there's about another 8 to 9 minutes left of the match to play. That, to me, is the opportunity to look to someone, which I thought the management and the substitutions were better in the Norwich match when you bring on someone like Alonso to shore up defensively, potentially bring in someone like Christensen, who's going to be more tidy with the retention of the ball. And really, like, the other team can't get an opportunity to shoot on our goal if our team has possession of the ball. Crazy idea, Nick, I know. But I think ultimately that is where I was hoping to see us go in the final minutes of the match. And when we didn't go there, I was a little surprised and felt like we ceded our advantage to Sheffield because they were in the ascendancy. They smelled blood in the water, and they knew that if they kept pressing and pressing and pressing, they would be able to break us down that moment because a lot of the strength had been removed from the side in that moment.
Yeah, I mean it's 100% right. The worst two times you can concede goals, right before or after halftime, and then, you know, right at the beginning of the match, at the end of the match, right? Like, you don't leave yourself a whole lot of margin for error with the latter, and with the former, I think it changes the entire tone of the match. That to me is something that, you know, we got to have a stronger mentality coming out. We got to be ready to play right at the start of the whistle, and it wasn't there yesterday.
Right. Well, speaking of those type of things, so we did get questions from Logan and PFS, who are both giving us some questions around the youth. Logan was more about was bringing on Gilmore, a rush decision to please the youth moment. He looked very nervous and shaky and lost possession a couple too many times. We were in need of some offense. And then POS saying, was this the right time for Lampard to change the defense and blood even younger youth team players, or should he have continued with the same team as before? I know that I was a little surprised to not see Christensen in after some of the performance that he's played. And I get rotation. I get Frank trying to figure it out. Tomori had played against Sheffield United last season, so he had some level of understanding of how that team likes to play. But I think I felt like it was a bit of a tactical misstep, at least in that moment in that match, to not field Christensen and Zuma together as they were starting to form at least some type of partnership, Nick. And I feel like the continuity question for me is, you know, either it means that Rudiger is absolutely going back in and he's still figuring out who the best partner for Rudiger is going to be, and maybe that's the right angle to think about it. But I just don't know if I liked that decision.
Well, I mean, I think your point about Christensen is warranted, right? Because even if he wasn't brought in, you know, or even if he didn't start the match, he could have been brought in as a central defensive midfielder to help shore things up, right? I mean, he's played that position before. So I think that was, there was a little naivete there. I mean, I understand Frank wanting to give Billy, you know, his moment, you know, and instill confidence in him that he sees him as a future part of the football club. But, you know, again, this is not a team that can just give away points. You know, like we don't know how many points this team has in them this year yet. And I think it seemed to me a little too Hollywood, kind of writing your own script rather than, you know, something that was a little bit more pragmatic. You know, and it's again, this is no kind of takedown of Billy Gilmore's performance. I mean, like, I try and put myself in that mentality as a 17-year-old, you know, in front of 45,000 people trying to do a good job and keep the win alive. I don't know if it was the right moment for him. And so that's when I would lean a little bit, you know, in a side full of youth, I'd lean more towards experience, Dan.
Yeah, I think the other one is you know, I know he's a fan favorite of many, especially after his thank you, Arsenal comments at the end of the, you know, Europa League celebrations and bus loading process last season. But not seeing Giroud come on for Mishy, again, felt like just another tactical misstep in trying to shore up the match appropriately. I think, again, you know, when we had Dan Levine on the last episodes, so if you listen out of order, go back and listen to that one. But we did talk about just the fact that, like, this is a learning process for Frank Lampard. This is his second year as a manager. He's doing it with a reduction of our best goal scorer, with multiple players, like our best player in N'Golo Kanté, out of the side at the moment. And it's tough. I mean, again, we're not going to drop the standards to say we shouldn't be winning these type of games, but I think when you get a chance to step away from the reactionary moment of it and look at it holistically, there's a lot that everyone from the players and the manager and the board come January or the summer need to be doing to help get this working and firing on all cylinders. And I mean, we're seeing the signs that it's going to happen, but yeah, definitely an opportunity to continue. And Nick, we did get a question here from Chase, and it was a question for the Goalkeepers Union. So we will try to do our best embodiment of Brandon Busby and answer it. But it was essentially, why will goalkeepers always wait until right when the defense is on them to kick the ball away? Is it bravado or a tactical reason?
I mean, I think it depends on the goalkeeper, right? Like, if you're thinking about Alisson from Liverpool, it's probably a little bit more bravado. You know, same with Ederson. You know, I think the... You know, if you're getting pressed as a goalkeeper, to me, it makes a lot of sense to kind of evaluate your options, especially now as the center backs are able to drop back into the box and make sure that you can beat the press. So that to me makes a lot of sense to kind of wait to evaluate kind of where the best pathway is going to be instead of just hoofing it long. But I also think there are times this season that Kepa and the defense, especially with Zuma and Emerson's side, have gotten a little bit too cute for my taste personally. And that's a thing that you could see coming back to bite us, Dan. That's kind of what I'm worried about in the end.
Yeah, I don't know if the distribution has been all that great. And I think distribution is twofold, right? It's the goalkeeper picking the right opportunity, whether it's a throw, whether it's a pass, whether it's a long ball. And then it's also the availability of the player to not get closed down and put themselves in space to either in transition or to hold up and claim the ball. I think there were a few times in this match where Kepa placed the ball on someone who was either immediately closed down or was getting closed down. And I think that's when he opted to start maybe doing some of the shorter passes. He definitely wanted to move quickly and always wants to move quick to try to restart the attack. But I think in general, he's had more of a rockier start to the season than many would have assumed, given how just impressive he was kind of heading into the end of last season, which I think, again, is part due to the fact that there is some defensive instability at the moment, multiple players rotating through, which doesn't give that goalkeeper and defense solidity or kind of mental link the same kind of abilities as it would maybe 10, 15, 20 games in the season when you have a really good understanding of how everyone plays and what to look out for. I think that's where he maybe gets a little caught off guard now. So not to put the blame solely on him, Nick, but I think it's part of his challenges is also the same challenges that the defense is having, is that the team is still getting accustomed to one another.
Yeah, and the reason why you have to win against Sheffield at home and, you know, beat the teams that Chelsea should be beating are that we need to have confidence. I think this team, when they're you know, as confident as they're going to be, are going to be a tough team for anyone in the league to play, including City and Liverpool. I think, you know, if they're not confident, you know, Sheffield United can come draw at home. And, you know, confidence goes all the way back to the goalkeeper and all the way up to Tammy. You know, there has to be understanding. There has to be, you know, a system that, you know, Aspi knows exactly where Kovacic is, knows exactly where, you know, Pulisic is on the right-hand side and can, you know, put the ball where he needs to without really thinking about it. And then, you know, on the other side, I think you have to kind of look to Emerson and Mason and you know, perhaps, you know, Jorginho or someone else to say, like, hey, guys, like, we, you know, if the distribution is coming out to the sides as it did last year from the goalkeeper, we can't then continue to put ourselves, you know, back into a situation where we can get pressed. That, you know, is something we really struggled with last year. And it's, I'm kind of seeing signs of that again. So it's a good question, though. I mean, you know, Brandon can't say anything, which makes me really happy about this because you would surely get, oh, it's not a Kepa's fault. But yeah, he hasn't looked great this year so far. So I think that's fair to say.
I'm trying to figure out which Muppet you've assigned, which Jim Henson creation you've basically assigned Brandon. Maybe that will be a question we can float out there. But
which Muppet should Busby be? Tweet at us. We would love to hear it, and that's my voice for him from now on.
Wow. What I would say is that we are seeing, though, and I've seen this a couple times, where Kepa will connect it immediately forward to one of the central defenders, and that individual, whether it be Zuma or Christensen, will actually carry it forward, cutting down the middle, which has been creating some space on the wings, because then ultimately people have to come back in centrally because they need to close down the space that's been created for that individual to carry it forward. So what I am liking is the fact there is some diversity in the way that we're launching the attacks versus last season with the recycling that would occur, which was, you know, Kepa to right back, back to Kepa, Kepa to left back, back to Kepa. And that was the only, you know, we only went down really the flanks to generate the start of our attack, then into Jorginho, then back out to the flank. It was very, you know, very triangles, right? Like it's 90, 90, 90. And you would just kind of hit it to whichever one of those people was ascribed. I do like the fact that we are seeing different ways to start the attack, and that at least is something both for Kepa and the defense and Frank that we should feel good about, Nick.
Yeah, I think there are positives. I think this team needs time to gel, and you know, again, I think I'll go back to this a lot this season. The Premier League is not the place to gel. I mean, you got to have your ducks in a row and your game plan together and execute it well to be successful. And you know, we're still kind of waiting to see the team put together kind of a full performance, and I'm hopeful that they're able to do it quickly.
All right, well, we wrapped on that one here. Let's just take a quick ad break, and we will be right back to talk about our next topic, which looks like it's about Willian, Pedro, Calvert-Lewin, RLC. What's going on with that formation challenge and selection challenge? Be right back. All right, well, selection challenges. Milhouse on Discord dropping the question, Nick, is Willian only playing because Callum Hudson-Odoi, Pedro, and RLC are injured? Will he be dropped and everybody else is healthy? He seems to try to do too much by himself. And before I give it to you, I do want to defend Willian a little bit because I think for his cameo appearance yesterday, the things that he was doing right in general were keeping the ball and actually pushing it forward closer to the final third and giving us some actually like pulling the Sheffield team a little bit to get us further forward. And I think, yes, he didn't contribute a goal or assist. And yes, I mean, there's still him getting back up to speed. But I actually think he was, out of all the substitutions that occurred yesterday, one of the, you know, one of the right substitutions to take place.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the, you know, is he going to be dropped when everyone else? You don't know that. I mean, I don't. You know, if I were making the lineup, I don't think he'd be a bang on starter right now. But, you know, I think there's still, again, you know, I know everyone's excited for Callum to come back. I know everyone's excited for Ruben to come back. Their injuries are serious, man. There's, I can't emphasize how serious an Achilles injury is. Even though it appears Callum's was less impactful than Ruben's was. I mean, it is absolutely devastating injury, especially for players who are, you know, kind of speedy and who have a lot of, you know, torque that's generated when they push off. Like, it's just not a good thing. So again, even though Callum's back in training and could be ready after the international break, you just hope that the Chelsea training staff is smart enough to give him time to really be full strength again. You know, only he's going to know that, and only his body's, you know, going to be able to tell him when it's time to go. So I'm certainly not trying to preach from a hilltop somewhere to tell him to wait until December if his body's ready in September. But, you know, I think the worst possible thing that could happen is that, you know, he eventually signs this contract, which somehow still isn't done, and then gets injured again. And you know, with the same injury, and that's when it becomes like career threatening. So I think you gotta kind of take all that into context when you're thinking about him coming back, and then also think about Willian's injury, which is far less serious. You know, Willian coming back just needs to gain fitness. You know, he's not fit right now. He is not sharp right now. There are a lot of passes that went wayward yesterday, Dan, that, you know, a fit, confident, you know, Willian definitely makes those plays happen and is able to dribble past people with ease. You know, I think that's just something where he has to gain a little bit of confidence. And, you know, Pedro's going to come back from this injury too. I would look for the experience of those two in the immediate term to start over, you know, players who are on longer term injuries like Callum and Ruben, and, you know, let's see if Rudiger's going to be healthy in there too, and N'Golo and all these guys.
There's a lot of reason points there, Nick. Just the absolute takes that you come here for, they are not even lukewarm. They are freezer cold in terms of their heat. And yeah, that all sounds right to me. I think what Willian does offer, and I think it is he does not offer a ton of goals. He does not offer a cross into the box that typically beats the first man. So we can be very honest about where his game maybe has not matured or is not as sharp as someone like Mason, who can offer a great corner. Barkley taking the free kick the other day was super annoying.
Yep.
But what Willian does do well, especially on the left-hand side, is that he will be able to keep possession of the ball, and hopefully as he gets fitter and fitter, will be in a position to help move the ball around and get it into the appropriate areas. And when you look at where we've struggled, it's really us getting actually into the attacking third. You know, if you think about yesterday, 711 passes, only 121 occurred in the attacking third. You know, if you're getting close to 70%+ possession, like, you need to find a way against these defenses of being able to recycle, keep possession, not turn the ball over, especially when you have a very fragile defense at the moment. I think those are the things that the attackers can do a better job of to help. And even though we've seen some dispossession, we saw some pretty poor pass selection at times yesterday, I do think a healthy Willian, a healthy Pedro, Pulisic getting a little bit of rest potentially over this international break, even though he's been called up, Mason not being forced to play on the left wing, Callum coming back healthy. And again, you know, we've only seen Callum in brief glimpses across what would be the start of his professional career. And to your point, like, if we're not letting N'Golo Kanté play for like an ankle issue, and that's a kind of a pain management potentially situation, I think the Chelsea medical staff will is very much working in the benefit of the player. Frank is working for the benefit of the player to make sure that they're healthy for the long term and not just the short term scenario.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, I know we're all excited for these like five quality injured players to come back, and especially as we haven't, you know, we've only been able to sign Kovacic in the summer, and we have a bunch of, you know, youth players coming back from loan. There's just, we have to be willing to give them time. I mean, because the long term is so much more important than the short term. Like, if N'Golo Kanté is really not healthy, don't play him. Don't play him till fucking October. I don't care. Like, long term, N'Golo Kanté is the best player at the club right now, and we can't have him on again, off again, injured all season. That's just not a sustainable way to go about it. So other players in the midfield are going to have to step up when he's hurt. He's clearly done more than his lion's share since 2016, since he arrived at the club. He's an unbelievable player. Same with Ruben, same with Callum, same with Rudiger, same with all these guys. Like, we got to make sure that when they're right, they're playing. But if they're hurt, we have to take a long-term approach. It annoys me at the short-termism of a lot of fans. And, you know, if I were a player, I would certainly hope that people were interested in my total health rather than just what I can do for them on a Saturday.
So contextually, because I think this is, you know, this is not a question, but what are your thoughts about if the season we had with Sarri last season was really difficult because we got out of the gate really strong and then struggled with results in the tail end of the season? And unfortunately right now we're on trend to have more than the 9 draws that we achieved last season. But narratively to me, like, if Frank struggles initially, solidifies into the, let's say, 12th match, 13th match forward for the remainder of the season, I think that's something I would rather have. I'd rather our licks and our wounds be licked earlier in the season, and then we build to something great versus starting out really strong, breaking down, and having this kind of malaise within the middle. I would rather that we learn initially as we get these players back up and fit. And what's your thought on just how we think about the framing of the season, especially related to last season where we did start so strong, but then petered off, ended obviously in a high, but we really had some periods there where we're not pleasant in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd much rather, you know, and I'm, by the way, when I say this, I'm not saying that we are going to win the league, but if you think back to the Antonio Conte season one approach where, you know, we struggled at the beginning of the season pretty mightily. And then it was, you know, what I think first match in October that, you know, the team went to the 3-4-3 and then everything changed. We won the league, but I would much rather go that way, figure it out in this early part of the season because you can recover. You know, if you strengthen and you finish strong, you can recover. The other way that, you know, happened last year relies a lot on other teams not finishing. So, you know, I'd much rather kind of, you know, go a little bit from weakness to strength than from strength to weakness, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, let us know what your thoughts are. Like, hit us up on Discord, hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all those wonderful places. Let us know what you think about just the structure of the season. Again, you know, we had 9 draws all last season, and, you know, that happened under Mauricio Sarri, happened on a Europa League winning side with Eden Hazard. It should not be all doom and gloom this early into the season, especially before we go over. And, you know, Nick, we tend to bring victories with us, or at least entertaining draws.
Yeah, that 0-0 against Southampton last year was quite the thing.
It was a delight.
So, yeah, let's hope we get a little bit more entertainment than that. I think we'll be just fine.
All right, kind of combined question here. Aerith Muggle and Big Nash talking a little bit about Azpilicueta and kind of some of the challenges that he's seen. Shane just putting it kind of right on the nose there. Both goals involved Azpilicueta getting beat and a cross going to the player Zuma was covering. Discuss. And again, another question straightforward that Nick Verlaney would appreciate.
Yeah. I mean, look, on part one of this week, we kind of discussed Aspi in some great detail. So I want to, you know, I don't want to be so repetitive here. But yeah, both attacks came from that side. You know, I think that was, you know, I don't you know, I know Zuma got a lot of stick after for the own goal. I mean, I think he was just trying to do his best to cover, and that happens sometimes. I mean, even JT had own goals squad, so like let's try and keep a little bit of a level head on that. But I certainly understand the frustration, and you know we know that Aspi has had better games than what he's, you know, kind of put out at the start of the season, and we also know that, you know, he's the captain, he's responsible for the team on the field, and you know you could make some pretty strong arguments that he needs to improve. You know, I think to some earlier points, he has a lot of responsibility and he's played a lot of matches and looks like he's running through sand at points, Dan. And you know, I think the ability to rotate a little bit will be, you know, probably welcome for him. But it's not as if there's any option really to do that, unless Frank goes kind of to a back three and institutes a wing back approach again. So, I we're going to have to rely on him. He's going to play a big role in the season. And, you know, Reese is not ready from injury yet. So, you know, for those who want to anoint him before his time, you know, let's just take a little bit of a long-term approach on that piece.
And I think the bigger thing is that, you know, Frank talks about this idea that the team concedes as a unit. It's not just the, you know, I think it's easy to pull out where maybe Asfalcata gets burned in the moment, or you know, Mishi turned the ball over, lost possession that led up to the goal that we conceded. Why are we not kind of looking at that as a critical opportunity? Because if Drew is in there, I kind of doubt he turns the ball over the same way. So it's easy to, I think what the challenge is not to allow a feeling about a player or their performance kind of allow you to make your narrative case that they're past their prime, they're not contributing to the team the right way, because that individual error in the sum of all of the errors that Chelsea made yesterday from management down to the bottom is that it's a collective failing to drop a 2-0 lead. That's not one individual player making all the mistakes. I mean, Zuma, half the time he attempts that, is probably going to, it's not, you know, 90% of the time, 99% of the time, he's not going to tip it into the goal. It's going to go the left way off his foot, similar to Tomori's challenge, go out, and we're going to be talking about, man, how amazing was that save? Same with Aspi. You know, there's going to be plenty of times we look at him. I mean, he's assisted already this season, and we're going to be like, wow, you know, he's offering a lot both ways. He's making himself available. But he in particular, is often been challenged every season up until now, especially with Eden Hazard and the focal point of the attack going through the left, which this team needs to balance to be more symmetrical in our attacking options, is that it basically has left Aspi on an island. So if that attacking player, whether that's Pedro or William, doesn't track back to help, whether that midfield individual doesn't come back to assist, he tends to get overloaded and is asked to do a 2-on-1, 3-on-1. And so if we're not looking more holistically, Nick, I think we lose sight of the fact that Aspi has generally had to do more with less on his side than Alonso did at times, where he would get, I think, a significant amount of assistance from the midfield or other players on the side.
Yeah, I mean, with any player, right? Whether it's Alonso from last year, whether it's Dave from this year, whether, you know, you kind of look at some of Zuma's earlier performances, or you look at Jorginho from last year, when an opposing team is able to isolate some of our players, it typically ends up not going well. It's the same thing we try and do to other teams. I think we're just feeling a little, you know, I think we're a little bit more acutely aware of it because of kind of what's happening, you know, and some of the gaps in the team. Aspi is a model professional. He's a guy that I truly have enjoyed watching at Chelsea Football Club. I do not at all think his time at the club is up, or that he's finished, or, you know, I mean, this Twitter narrative is just fucking garbage, to be honest with you. Like, I just can't stand it. Now, he has to improve. I think we can be fair on that point. He has to do better. I think he is, you know, as a leader, has to be, you know, a little bit more responsible for when the tide turns against us, getting everyone back into it. And he clearly has better defensive days in him. So let's hope that Frank is able to kind of identify that, or give him some rest, or, you know, put Fekayo out at right back for a match or two so that he can kind of see it from the bench or whatever needs to happen. But he is our captain. He's one of the most experienced players in this side. If you look at the, you know, how young the side was yesterday, and he needs to be ever present in this squad this year. You know, I know that people are frustrated with him. Just give him a second, okay?
I think that's fair. That is very fair. So our last question before we wrap comes from Miles, saying, he didn't think we'd get it in before recording, but we got you, Miles. Is that what will our starting lineup be after the international break, considering the injury comebacks? And Nick, what I will caveat is Frank has said, Pedro looks like he should be good to go, and Conte looks like he should be good to go. And then as we talked to Dan Levine, Rüdiger has been getting those minutes, full 90s, in PL2, which should put us in a good position. So who's your starting 11 heading into the Wolves match?
Okay, so I'm interested in this. You know, I think Aspi is back at right back. Kepa obviously in between the sticks. I think Rüdiger does come back. I think he is paired with Christensen in the back, at center back. I think Emerson has clearly cemented his place at left back. If N'Golo Kanté is healthy, and I put that as the biggest fucking asterisk in the world right now, then he obviously is my first name on the team sheet every game. If he is not, then I go with a 4-3-3 type of scenario with Jorginho, Kovacic, and probably Barkley. Although it wouldn't be the worst thing to see Mason Mount drop in as like a number eight type. I know that's a lightweight midfield, but at least there's some good passing within that. And then I would probably throw Willian and or Pedro and Pulisic on either wing in a 4-3-3 with Olivier Giroud starting up front against what is a tough Wolves center back situation. Although, Dan, Bully out, red card. Maybe Tammy gets the start after all.
I just don't. I know you stand for your man, but boy, oh boy,
I stand.
You definitely.
I'm loyal.
I don't know what you're on with putting Giroud in ahead of Tammy when Tammy is going to eclipse his goal contribution record to Chelsea in the Premier League probably in this match. I don't get it.
Well, look, I think. What's interesting about Wolves is, like, I think tactically they're probably one of my, like, least favorite teams to play against in the league. You know, I think we had a tremendous amount of trouble with them last year. And if you show any sort of weakness, I think Nuno, who is a manager that I still really like, has a very good system to kind of neutralize your greatest impact and then try and attack your greatest weaknesses. They have improved over the offseason too. I mean, they were they kind of strengthened, and I know they went kind of toe to toe with Everton today, but they're going to be tough, man. Like, okay, let's pretend that, you know, it's not a huge point of pretending. Well, let's say Tammy gets a start. Frank has to identify if he's having a rough game. Maybe. And I know it's illegal, but maybe you play Giroud and Tammy together.
Oh, which that's just foolish. You know
it's illegal.
Premier League will come out and give us a five point deduction for doing that.
And that's all of our points.
But look at their form. Okay, you know, again, Wolves have probably lower expectations than us in terms of where they should be this season. Drew Leicester, which we did. They drew against United. Obviously, I think United should not have gone the way it did, but it did for us. They drew with Burnley, and now they just lost to Everton. I don't know, especially as they kind of now add the fact that they're playing Thursday night football. I don't know if they're as strong. You know, they look strong on paper, but I think maybe tactically or where they're at as a club today, maybe they're not as strong as they were last season. And I think again, I would just go with the hot hand. I mean, you know, I look at my lineup and I'm kind of drawing it out here. Agree with Kepa, agree with Aspie, agree with Rudy, agree with Christensen, Emerson. I go two in front of the defense. I go with the Kovacic-Conte pairing to really shore up some of the solidity, really bring some actual ball movement forward, kind of have that two box-to-box situation going on. Pedro Mount, Pulisic, and then Abraham as my lineup. And I think that is a lineup that should be able to take all the points, even going away versus Wolves. I feel confident if Conte, Kovacic, Rudiger are all back to full fitness and able to contribute, I think that's a winning lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. You know, I think this team, again, the schedule makers did Frank Lampard no favors at the beginning of the season. You know, going to Wolves away, you know, as Manchester United just found out, not easy. You know, they're certainly going to, I think, give us everything they got. And we're going to need to be, I think, play a very sharp, succinct, you know, passing system to kind of get through their kind of three-back system. So it's going to be really interesting. I mean, again, when you look at how we struggled with them last year with a lot more experience in the team, I'm not filled with confidence that we're going to get all 3 points, but I know certainly it's something that we, you know, should aim for every time out. And I hope that, you know, the Mason Tammy connection still is solid. I think, you know, with a maybe a little bit of Rudiger involved, that there could be some solidity there, but this team has a lot of stuff to work on over the next, you know, couple of weeks, and let's just hope that they start to find some solidity.
Agreed. Co-signed. Signed, sealed, delivered. That is it. We have landed our second episode of the week, and we are going to get you out on that note. Nick, any final thoughts, though? Give you one last chance. No Brandon here. No rules.
Yeah, my Giroud take from earlier is probably wrong, so Just stop yelling at me, everyone. Everyone's mad. It's fine. I still think he's great.
I don't think anyone questions that Giroud is a great professional. I mean, Dan made the comments in the last episode about how he was applauding the work rate of Tammy. I think it's just the question of who should be the starting striker. And four goals in two matches, two braces, is probably enough proof at the moment to say that he should be starting ahead of Giroud, regardless of what you kind of look at from a game perspective or what he does or doesn't offer. I mean, finding the back of the net is the most important thing for a striker.
It is, but also having the stamina to play 90 minutes sure. is important. And I, you know, again, I think there's some questions about a lot of players in the squad, not just Tammy, having the ability to go a full 90. So for all the stick that Cesar Azpilicueta gets, I think he is the model professional of what 90 minutes typically looks like and giving it your all. So just some thoughts.
All right. Well, that will do it for us. We might have a special pod or two during the international break. I think we're definitely going to record something as the Chelsea women take on the Spurs women's team coming up the next Sunday, or this coming Sunday when you're listening, the 8th. So we will chat about that with you. But enjoy some international football. Enjoy not worrying about N'Golo Kanté getting injured because he's not playing. And until next time, Chelsea fans, you know what to do. Keep the blue flag flying high.